to Dialogue Across Difference, an event series hosted by the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Join us as Center Director Larry Jacobs and guests engage in conversations across the political and policy spectrum on issues of the day.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us. My name is Lee Chittenden. I am the Associate Director of the Center for the Study of Politics and Governance here at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs. Before we begin today, I want to invite you to participate in today's event. As you can see on the slide here, there is a Q&A button at the bottom of the screen. You can use this to submit questions throughout the program, and then we will get to as many as possible. We also have live captioning available, and to turn that on, you click on the closed caption button there on the bottom of the toolbar there, and you will get a live caption for the event. The Center has some exciting events coming up here in April that are part of our 2024 election series. On April 22nd, we have an event in our Nakasaka Dialogue series with former U.S. Senator Rob Portman. Senator Portman will be discussing his approach to achieving bipartisan success. You can join us virtually for that or in person here at the Humphrey School. And then on April 29th, we have prominent political consultant and pollster Anna Greenberg joining us for a discussion on the power of women voters in the 2024 elections. This event will also be available both virtually and in person here at the Humphrey School. So we hope you can join us for both of those events. And turning to today's event, many Americans are on fire about the stakes in the upcoming 2024 elections. But what about those in the other America that are not that interested? Who are they and why are they sitting out elections? To talk us through that, we've got Taylor Carlson, who will moderate today's conversation. She is an associate professor in the political science department at Washington University in St. Louis. She studies political communication and political psychology in American politics. Her research focuses on understanding the content and consequences of interpersonal political communication. Taylor, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Lee, and thank all of you for joining us for today's program. Why are so many Americans uninterested in politics? We are joined by two terrific guests today. Yana Krupnikov is a professor of communication and media at the University of Michigan. Her work focuses on political communication. Her most recent research considers differences in attention to the news and differences in political expression, both on and off social media platforms. And we are joined by Marcus Pryor, who's a professor of politics and public affairs at Princeton University. His research has examined how people learn about politics, the role of media in politics, the measurement of news audiences, and the impact and origins of political interest. Let's get started. To start off, I was hoping that Marcus and Yana could tell us a little bit about the landscape of interest in politics in the United States. So I'm hoping that they can share with us some insights on whether we have seen people becoming more or less interested in politics over time, or if this is a relatively stable trait. And I'm wondering if I can initially pitch that over to Marcus, because I think this speaks to some of his earlier work on the topic. And then I have a follow-up question for Yana coming up. Marcus, I think you're muted. Sorry.
Oh, I hope I'm not muted anymore. Hi. Thanks for having me, and I'm happy to talk to an audience that I can't really see. So I hope I look good to all of you. So political interest. I studied this topic for quite a while, but I think summarize fairly quickly the main things that I learned. It is sort of middling. There are a bunch of people who are very interested, a bunch of people who are not interested at all. And then there is a middle of sort of so-so interested people. And that has not changed very much over decades. I studied this in the United States and in other developed countries. And so the patterns look very similar across countries. It's mostly horizontal lines that don't move up and down all that much. So those of you who are tuning into a webinar like this, you're probably at the top of the political interest distribution. And it's important for us not to forget that there are many other people who wouldn't be interested in spending an hour like this, or, you know, picking up the paper or looking online for political information.
Thank you. So that's interesting to think about this as a relatively flat relationship over time that's been fairly stable. It seems like a lot of the discourse these days leads us to think that this is something that has changed and that we're now in this moment of crisis. And so it's interesting to see that the data doesn't necessarily align with this expectation. So Yana, my follow-up question is, I was wondering if you could kind of shed a little bit of light on what things look like, you know, right now or within the past couple of years, kind of building on your book, The Other Divide, and tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of add a little bit more color to this. We've got a relatively stable trend over time that Marcus was telling us about, but what are people on fire about today, or that bulk of the distribution that's less interested in politics? What does that look like today?
Yeah, so first of all, thank you so much for having me as well. And thank you, Taylor, for these great questions. So in our research, what we're looking at is something related to interest, which is political involvement, which is, yes, how interested you are in the news, but also kind of how emotionally important it is to you, how important it is for you to follow politics in your daily life. And so what we've seen in our data is that there's certainly people, they're usually about 20% in an American context, who are what we would call deeply involved, deeply engaged. They care a lot about politics. They have, they're emotionally invested in following political news. These are the types of people who might get a little anxious if they can't keep up with the news, who feel that it's important to share political articles, who feel it's important to talk about politics. These are the people who are deeply engaged, deeply involved. It might be surprising to those folks, as it is in some of our studies, that there are a large proportion of people who aren't as engaged in politics, but that is in fact what we find. But what I want to emphasize here is that these aren't people who don't care, and these aren't people who don't think that there are no important problems or important issues. Rather, these are people who, they keep up with the news, they might know what's going on in the election, but they're not as deeply connected to this process of keeping up with politics. They don't feel that emotional attachment. So I think that's one really important aspect of thinking about political interest. It's not just people who care and people who don't. It's people who have, who spend a lot of time, who are deeply involved, who believe it's important to share and speak about politics, and kind of a large component of the rest of the population that includes a lot of people who have very different relationships to politics. The other thing to emphasize is that one thing that we've seen in recent studies, and this is research done by the Reuters Institute on Digital News at Oxford, some work by Ben Toff, for example, is about this concept of news avoidance, that it's not just a lack of interest, but we do see an increase, and the report shows this actually across the globe, of people who report that they now on occasion are actually deliberately trying to avoid the news. And in particular, they're deliberately trying to avoid the news about national politics. This is, as the report suggests, in the US across both parties, at about 40% of the public report that on occasion, they are in fact trying to avoid the news about national politics, which I think adds this other dimension about the way people engage with political information.
Great. Thank you, Yana. And that actually leads right into my next question, which was, how should we be thinking about being interested in politics as opposed to being interested in the news? So you painted this picture about, you know, this not new phenomenon, but more recently documented and being this topic of news avoidance being explored more. Can we think about interest in politics as being the same as interest in news, or in what ways are they different?
You know, I think, and I think after this, Marcus should pipe in on this as well. I think there's often a lot of correlation with people reporting interest in politics and interest in news. In our research, so my research with John Ryan, we're getting really at people who are incredibly engaged. These are the people who are speaking out, they're sharing information, they're often posting their opinions on social media. And for them, interest in politics and connection to news are really, really heavily linked. Right? They are following the news on an almost hourly basis in order to kind of retain this connection, to know everything that's going on. For others, I think this connection to news might ebb and flow with a particular time in a political calendar, for example, in terms of elections, or when something else is happening.
Yeah, I would add to that only sort of one wrinkle that I find interesting. When you ask people how interested they find the news, there is a, for the most part, Jana is right, it lines up very well with when you ask them a question about their interest in politics. People think of that as roughly the same thing, except for a fairly small segment of the population that is interested in news, but news about, you know, celebrities, news about sports. They think that ESPN, you know, news is sort of what we have in mind when we ask this question. And we tend to think more of, you know, the, you know, what used to be the nightly evening news, but what is clearly a political news around the clock these days. But I think that's actually, that's a relatively minor departure from the overall pattern that, yes, news and politics, they do go together in terms of how interesting they are to people.
Great, thank you. And so we have a couple of questions from the audience that I think are actually really nicely focused on this conversation. So one question is, are people equally turned off to national political news or as they are to local and state politics? Or does this interest in news or news avoidance change depending on whether we're talking about national partisan politics or what's going on in local communities?
Yeah, my insights on that are a little dated, and that I think actually the best behavioral measure of it, like when we can observe what people do, is no longer quite relevant. But in the old days, you had the local news and then the national news at the, you know, following each other in the evening. And it was a pretty clear pattern that the local news would always draw a little bit bigger audiences, you know, I don't know, 5 to 10% more people. So not a dramatic difference, but local seems a little bit more interesting. When you ask people directly whether they find those interesting, you tend to get slightly larger numbers for local politics as interesting. But I wouldn't want to exaggerate how big the differences are. For the most part, I think it is a pretty general thing. It's either it's politics and you like it, or it's politics and you don't like it.
So, in anticipation of this webinar, I had looked up the Reuters Digital Institute 2023 report on news avoidance, and it reflects basically what Marcus is saying. On the question of have you ever deliberately tried to avoid the news, about 43% of the respondents in their study in the U.S. say that they have deliberately tried to avoid national political news. Now, that compares to about 9% who report that they have deliberately tried to avoid local news. So again, suggests some drop off from national to local, though again, I think a lot of it has to do with just a general orientation to politics.
And thank you. And I think, you know, we hear a lot of talk these days too about the overall nationalization of politics and nationalization of news and things like that. So I think it's interesting to think about that in this context. This is building a bit on some questions from the audience too. We're seeing a couple of questions come in about the types of people who are interested in politics. So things like, is interest in politics and interest in news correlated with things like age, gender? Like if we're thinking about this distribution of, you know, maybe mostly the people who are here in this webinar with us today, like what are the demographic characteristics of the types of people who tend to be most interested in politics? And maybe, and as a small follow-up too, if I may, How has that shifted over time, even if overall interest has remained stable? Is it the same groups of people that are interested in politics over time?
So age is the, among the demographic factors, age is the big one, that older people are more interested in the news. And it seems to be actually not just that we are like, as you get older, you get more and more interested, but rather that young people are not particularly interested. And by, you know, by early adulthood, by sort of in people's mid-20s, they usually are at a, they reach a fairly steady level of political interest. After that, it doesn't change all that much anymore. So if you're not interested by age 25 or 30, you're probably not going to get more interest over time. But that would, that the pattern that early, the sort of the adolescence and young adulthood as relatively low on political interest still, that would explain why we tend to see such higher participation rates among older people. And I think, again, flipping it is a better way of putting it. Young people are just disproportionately unlikely to participate in politics.
So in our research, the measure we're looking is what I like to describe almost beyond interest. It's sort of a sense of really deep involvement. You're constantly following politics. You're talking about it a lot. There we see that one of the greatest predictors there, one of the greatest correlates there, I should say, is income and education. So people who are wealthier tend to be really deeply involved in politics. They tend to be the ones who are most likely sharing political news stories and so forth, and the same with levels of education as well.
Great, thank you. So,
Haley, can I say one more thing on this?
Oh, yes, please do.
I think this is actually, it's a really good question about the demo, like sort of who are the people who are interested, and are they particularly from one, you know, type of American or one type of citizen? And the fact that demographics for the most part actually are not particularly strongly related to political interest, I think it's fairly reassuring. It's like, it really isn't that being interested in participating is only a reflection of maybe being in a, being wealthy, being like in a position, being educated, being in a position to sort of feel like, oh, I'm competent and I can participate. You really get interest from, you know, all kinds of different demographics. And there's not too much good news in American politics these days, but I think that one is still that makes me feel relatively comfortable. That you get sort of a fairly broad cross-section of people who decide that they find this interesting and then participate.
Thank you. I'm so glad you chimed back in. Yeah, and to that end, if you all want to go back and forth more than once on any question, you're welcome to. And so that's interesting. So I think that's a nice, reassuring sentiment. But one thing that I think is maybe interesting to think about is this link between interest in politics and taking action. And so to what extent are interest in politics and political participation broadly defined linked? And to what extent, if we want to try to increase political participation, perhaps among an underrepresented group or something like that, does the first step need to be increasing their interest in politics? Like, does that come before participation, or how can we think about, what that relationship looks like to begin with? And then how can we think about sort of using that to maybe mobilize certain groups in the electorate? Sorry, there's a lot in that question. I'm summarizing across a couple of questions in the chat.
I see in the chat the word correlation, and that means we have a highly educated audience here. So I think for the question, Taylor, that you're asking, this difference between correlation and causation is one of the is just so tricky. So we know for a fact that the association between interests and then behaviors that like reflect engagement with politics, like going to vote or turning on the news or, you know, following the news, those are very strong correlations. But it's much harder to say, how did this start? How did the chicken and egg And so I think it, for what, for with a sort of a modest degree of confidence, I would say that it can go in both directions. It's, for me, it's much more natural to think I'm interested in something, and as a result of that, I then pursue that. I do stuff that it sort of engages my interest. But you could also think of the reverse. Like an example would be that you might end up going to the polls because somebody else says, like, hey, it's election day, can you just come along with me? And you might not be so interested yourself. And then you observe the political process and maybe get involved in some political conversations. And now, like, oh, actually, it's a little more interesting than I thought.
Yeah. So to echo, I think a lot of it is correlations. It's sort of, I think, difficult to create a way of essentially randomly assigning political interests and seeing basically what's going to happen. I think another thing to think about, though, here is what type of participation are we talking about? Are we talking about something like voter turnout? Are we talking about something that is essentially more public and more expressive, like sharing signs or sharing your opinions or even kind of speaking up in a group? And I think those are going to have different barriers to entry, I should say, in terms of getting people to engage. What we find in our research is for a lot of people who aren't as deeply involved, they find politics incredibly, like, frightening, almost in some sense, and very anxiety provoking. There's, for example, an article by Toffin Nielsen that says that one of the reasons people avoid political news is anxiety. And I should plug an excellent book by our moderator, Dr. Taylor Carlson, and co-author Jamie Settle, Girls Up, What Goes Without Saying, that suggests that people are sort of really nervous of engaging in political expression. So I think when we have these other forms of political participation, which are really important as well, they're interest might not be enough even as a correlate. People might be really interested in politics, really care about something, really worry about something, but feel anxious just to speak up or enter a political space.
Thank you. You're far too kind. That's a great answer, and I think leads to a question that came up a little while ago, but I think we can kind of pivot back to it now, which is thinking about what is it that leads people to be uninterested in politics. So if sparking interest is something that's going to be more challenging, what are the things that are really turning people off? And this might return a little bit to your earlier book with Samara Klar, Yana. But so is it this anxiety, like in Benjamin Toff's work, or what are the types of things about politics that are leading people to avoid the news, but also kind of lack this interest? Is it boring or is it too toxic? What are some of these characteristics of the political environment that are leading people to avoid it?
So one place I'll start is there's been a lot of research on people associating politics with conflict. There's, work by Emily Sidnor and Jenny Wolak talking about that politics has been wrapped up as being really conflictual. And this worry that people have that once they enter into a political conversation, a conflict is really bound to happen. In fact, there's this really interesting work by Kathy Kramer where she observed political conversations among people. And she found that if nobody fought, people didn't feel like they talked about politics. So even if they had a perfectly kind of pleasant conversation that was, the political scientists would say, yes, it's about politics, they didn't feel like they had talked about it because there was no argument. And so I think in a lot of cases, this worry that there will be an argument makes it sort of difficult for people to enter a space. I think in some cases, it's a sense of efficacy. I don't want to put like a pessimistic spin on Marcus's optimistic point. I do think that there are some people who worry that the barriers too edgy or too high that you actually, that you have to follow too much news and you have to follow, get like too many facts and you have to do sort of too many things to participate, to at least be interested or to at least describe yourself as interested in a political setting. So I think this wrap up of conflict and politics that researchers have suggested is one place that might be turning some people away.
Let me just be clear. I don't mean to say that it is easy to participate in politics in the United States. There are many structural obstacles to participation that make it costly, more costly, I think, than it needs to be to participate. And so I agree with that last point Jana made there, that not everybody can just do it sort of like politically what they want, because some people, you know, they have to work on election day or they can't afford to take time off to participate in deeper ways than just go vote. So what I said actually is more about the underlying interests, so the your internal motivation that can still be there even if you often don't have the opportunity to act on it, right? That those things are consistent with each other. And so what I was saying about optimism might be a little too strong, but there's sort of like, at least I'm not deeply pessimistic. I think it's nice that there is a sort of widespread distribution of political interest that doesn't necessarily pertain to participation in exactly the same way. That's a really important point.
All right, thank you. So I think a related question to this conversation about, you know, the types of people who are interested or uninterested in politics and kind of what their motivations might be, is thinking a little bit beyond just the standard demographics that we might be interested in the United States, and thinking a little bit more about life experiences. And one thing that some people in the chat, and I would also be interested in your thoughts on, are things like socialization. So is like the experience, for example, of being a parent, something that puts a lot of too much the demands on your time are too high, that when you're parent, the age at which you're parenting children and things like that, you can't keep up with politics. You aren't able to prioritize it, or you're early in your career, things like that. And then, you know, sort of related to this, how are these characteristics of interest in politics as well as political participation kind of passed on through familial networks? And what does that kind of look like in thinking about, so one, these life experiences that might shape interest in politics and dedication to the news. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'll take the parents if I may. Chris, in my research, that was one of the most interesting elements of how socialization happens and how political interest can actually change. It's generally, as I said, it's generally very hard to change it, but not so much among kids. And if you know, remember how you started out, at some point you had to actually first learn, what does this word even mean? What does politics mean? It's kind of hard to be interested in something when you don't know the domain yet. So there is this fairly short period where young people might become interested, or they might not. And parents really are quite important there. At the risk of, you know, geeking out here for a second, there are these studies, they're called household studies, and they interview every member of the household above a certain age. And so you get extra permission to actually speak to kids for this, because you think it's very important to not just start with adults, not just start with, you know, 18 and older. You really want to understand what happens in childhood as well. And so some of these studies, they do this repeatedly over time. And so you can follow entire households over time for decades. And so you use those data to try to understand the dynamics of what happens at a young age. And so the best way to get interested is to have politically interested parents. And that sounds almost too obvious. And then it gets interesting when the parents don't quite agree. So imagine you have one interested parent and one not so interested parent. Those conditions are not as good for becoming interested yourself as if you have, you know, two parents that kind of agree on their assessment, even maybe if it's not quite as exuberant, but they're both, you know, reasonably interested in politics. That's sort of probably the best environment to have politically interested offspring. And then when the kids leave the household, the impact of the parents sort of declines a little bit, which I think is fascinating and also probably is common sense, but it seems to be really important to observe other people behaving in this interested way.
Yeah, I mean, so Marcus, I think, has written like the book on political interest, including this excellent work on socialization. So there isn't anything, I think. Yeah, you've done the work on it, so.
Great. Well, thank you for walking us through some of that. So another question I have, and I'm sure you sort of thought this question might be coming, so I'm sorry, not sorry for throwing it your way, but I think, you know, as we talk about news avoidance, it's hard to not think about what role the media could be playing in that process. So we talked a little bit about some of the factors that turn people off. So what role has the media played in like its coverage choices in maybe structuring a lack of interest in politics or contributing to this news avoidance? Or if you want to dodge that a little bit because it's hard to think about, I don't know, maybe this is easier or harder, but thinking about the role social media has played in, you know, how we are exposed to information, the types of news that we're exposed to online, and does that, you know, exacerbate these things that turn people off from politics, or does it actually draw people in who might otherwise be not exposed to politics and they're sort of accidentally or inadvertently exposed to this content? And how do we think about this changing information ecosystem and sort of changes to the media environment and how that might contribute to interest in politics, acknowledging that it might actually be stable over time. So maybe it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, you get this one.
Okay. Oh, thank you. So this is a really important and really tough question. So to return to a previous point, a lot of it is going to be correlational. A lot of it isn't going to be sort of causal, in part because we cannot just randomly assign information. I think there are a couple of things that are important to pinpoint. Speaking to social media, on social media, we're exposed to news, but we're also exposed to the opinions of other people. In our research, we find people who are less engaged, less involved in politics, have a really deep skepticism about why people post things to social media. In our studies, the people who are deeply involved and deeply engaged believe that when they post things, they're trying to give people good information and educate them and help them. People who are less involved believe that political information is being posted because somebody's trying to persuade them, somebody wants to share their opinion, somebody wants to find other people who agree with them. So this divide in political interest and involvement is also a divide in how people view information that is posted online on social media. The other, I think, important thing is to think about how many people are actually observing and engaging political information on social media. And as Magdalena Wojcicki's work shows, it isn't actually that many. It isn't actually that many people who are kind of consistently and routinely seeing politics on social media or these things coming through their feeds. Now, it's possible that they're getting politics from spaces that they do not realize are political. My colleague Ariel Hazel's work suggests that people are actually somehow getting a lot of political cues, for example, from aspirational wellness influencers who they don't realize are sharing political information, and that might have some correlation on their political opinions. And I think that is important as well. So we often pick up on these political news that's being shared and political information, but I think increasingly research, for example, Yoon Ji Kim's work on people getting cues about the American dream from reality shows shows that people might be getting a lot of political information when they're not kind of searching for it, when they're not realizing it's actually political. Speaking to mainstream media and speaking to journalists, I think one place to think about what the news landscape looks like and what it does for political interest is to start with Nikki Usher's book called News for the Rich, White, and Blue, in which they look through essentially networks of journalists. And they find really that journalists are embedded in these networks, and they're mostly in a way responding and covering things that somebody else has found important, which means that news is often created by and for people who are most politically involved. News is shaped by the fact that some people, those who are most politically engaged, most politically involved, are most likely to, let's say, communicate with journalists, send their views to journalists, and then the journalists themselves are replicating these networks. So I think that book is kind of an excellent place to think about the production of journalism as it relates to political interest.
Just to maybe explain why this is a really hard question and why I don't really know quite what I think about the empirical evidence on this. If you wanted the news to get people to be more interested, you'd have to first get people who are not particularly interested to pay attention to the news. Well, but why would they do that? If they have other things that they find more interesting, why would they take the time to expose themselves to the news in the first place? And so these kind of indirect, or we call them sometimes incidental or accidental exposures to politics or news that Jana's talking about, they might be really important. They're also really hard to study because they're incidental. So you might not even know that this happened to you, and that, oh, you actually were watching some entertainment programming, or you were on social media on something that didn't seem political, and then you were exposed to something about politics in this way. And then we ask you about it later, you might have forgotten. So it's just a very hard thing to really get an empirical grip on.
Yeah, and so to emphasize that, I think right, it's so incredibly hard, which is what makes to plug again Yoon-ji Kim's work so kind of amazing in a way, in that she did randomly show people these reality shows and immediately see kind of how their political opinions changed after viewing this thing that we as political scientists would not in a second classify as being political at all. But yeah, I think that's a really important point for Marcus, that it's so hard to study, which is why it's difficult to then say, well, if the journalists only did this thing, everything would be great.
Great. Thank you. I can't quite tell if the tone of our conversation today has become more or less optimistic over time, but I'm going to lead us to some maybe pessimistic questions, but I don't know what your answers are going to be. So I think related to this conversation about like what can media do, or what are these things that turn people off? What is the relationship between interest and news avoidance? All of these characteristics. I think there are two other factors that I think we haven't really touched on too much yet, and that's trust in media, which we know like empirically has been on the decline over the past couple of years. And I know there's a lot of scholarship in this space. And so I'm wondering if you can kind of shed a little bit of light on what is this relationship between interest in politics / news, if we're thinking about them synonymously, and having trust in media. And how is that then also related to trust in government? And is this trust component, when we know we have these disinformation campaigns happening online, we know we have media bias across all platforms, on and offline, and just thinking about what are these characteristics that lead people to distrust media, and how does that shape their interest in politics?
Well, so even though I really spend a fair number of years studying this, I don't have evidence in favor of a link between trust and interest, so that if you trust either media or government more, does that make you more interested? I think I would characterize sort of the empirical foundation for that statement as fairly weak. So I'm not quite sure. I could be convinced that this is a big deal, but I haven't seen evidence to that effect yet. It seems like an obvious proposition, right? And it follows a little bit the public discourse that there is the mainstream media and maybe a slightly leftward tilt in the mainstream media, and then therefore if you find yourself, you know, disagreeing with a sort of left of center view of politics, you might be like, well, I can't trust these guys, or I don't find these guys particularly interested in the way they talk about politics. What do I, oh, I can't then be interested, but you can, right? There are so many options, and there certainly is right of center news as well that you could pursue.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of the media environment becoming more fractured, which means that we have many more options, and does kind of cut at this potential relationship again between trust and the news. You have so many choices if you don't trust the mainstream news.
Great, thank you. I've also found, I know I'm maybe abusing my moderator privileges here, but I will also say that in some of my work, I've found that when people distrust mainstream media, they opt more for social forms of information. So they'll rely on people in their social networks for information, and maybe they're getting it from some news source, but they're relying on people within their networks, and just kind of, they think they're cutting out media altogether, but they're just getting this like filtered messaging from people in their social network. So I think trust is really important in shaping where people get news, but it is sort of like conditional then on having some kind of interest in politics to some extent. So as we're turning toward the downslope on our conversation today, I wanted to zoom out a little bit and think about some of the bigger picture implications about what's at stake here. Not that we haven't talked about that yet today, but I wanted to think about whether it is sort of normatively good or bad to increase interest in politics. So what are the trade-offs of having a public that is super interested in politics? We're seeing a lot of conversation in the chat where, you know, people are saying it's so important to teach civic skills and like get people voting. And I think there are a lot of people who think that way. But is there a point at which, you know, too much interest is a bad thing? You know, we can all use different yardsticks for considering what is good and bad, a good and bad way to engage in politics. So what's at stake if we do not have a particularly interested public?
Yana, do you want to go first?
Well, I was going to ask you a question. Kind of given all your data, do we have a particularly not interested public, do you think?
I think that's a trick question. It really depends on what our expectations are. It seems naive to imagine that, you know, most of the public would be interested in politics. Why would that be the case? And also, would it be a bad thing if not everybody is interested? Or is it a bad thing that not everybody is so interested? It's not, I think, my view on this is it really depends on the conditions under which the interest emerges and or the lack of interest. So if things are going fairly smoothly and people are just sort of satisfied with how things are going, to the extent that that's, you know, halfway informed and based in some reality, and then they decide, well, this election doesn't seem all that important because I think, you know, the incumbent is doing a good job and there is no challenger, or the challenger isn't particularly credible challenger. In that case, to be like, I'm not super interested in the outcome of that election. I think I kind of know what's going to happen, and that's fine because the incumbent is doing a fine job. That's not a, oh, you know, the bottom's falling kind of story. At the same time, you can imagine extremely high turnout when things are really chaotic and in crisis. And so then high turnout or high interest would not necessarily be a sign that everything is in great shape.
Yeah, yeah. And I think so sort of with that, I think thinking of things like civic skills, I wonder if a way to think about civic skills is to think of them in context of another term that political scientists use a lot, which is efficacy. So the idea that you believe that you have the capability of contributing to politics, or you believe that if you see something going wrong, you have the capability to live in a system which might be responsive to you. And I think kind of civic skills that help people have some sense of efficacy are different than building this sense of interest in politics. I think that distinction is really important. In terms of what is the optimal level of interest, to echo Marcus, that's a really difficult question. I would say, again, I think we should think about how people feel about their potential of contribution should they want to, rather than whether they are following politics on an hourly basis in that sort of sense.
So I can go a little darker if you all want. I don't think everything is great. And I told you that parents were one factor that really helped explain why some people are interested, others are not. The second biggest one, or the second big one, it might actually be bigger than parents even, is people's level of partisanship. To what extent do they identify with the party, think of themselves as, you know, a supporter of a party? And so a really surefire way to get people more interested is to make them more partisan. And so that's not really saying anything about what's the optimal level of interest, but it's saying, well, if you're finding yourself listening to this, wishing that, oh, we had a little more interest in the population, well, you could get that, but you might then also have an even more partisan electorate. And so do you want to take that deal, or are you actually okay with having a little bit less partisanship and then also a little bit less political interest? The empirical pattern that those two things are kind of linked in a trade-off is pretty clear to me.
Yeah. So to add kind of to the partisanship component there, you know, in our research of people who are really highly engaged, they're also much more affectively polarized. So they actually fairly strongly dislike the other party. So again, right, these things, partisanship and polarization and political engagement, are really sort of in a way heavily connected, which again affects how we think about interest within the electorate.
Thank you. So, and these are, I think, the types of trade-offs that highlight why this is such an interesting attitude or preference, maybe, for politics to have, and why it's so important and interesting to study. So I want to think a little bit looking into the 2024 elections. One question is, do you think that, and again, I know Marcus set us up for thinking that interest in politics is stable over time, but Jana pointed out that maybe interest in news at least might fluctuate with what's going on in an electoral cycle. So thinking about 2024, do you think that people are more interested in politics now than they were in 2020 when we had record high voter turnout and participation? And are the same groups of people interested in politics, maybe not right now, but, you know, September, October, November? What are your thoughts about interest in politics looking ahead into 2024? I know we're in 2024, but like fall 2024.
There is a sort of a subtle difference between being generally interested in politics and being interested in political campaigns. It's kind of the right time, you know, 50 minutes in to bring this up, because it's not really super important. For the most part, those two things are related, but there is a sort of effect that we see in most election years that there is a little uptick. I don't want to exaggerate how big it is, because for the most part, you guys are great and following along with my things are not changing very much. But there's, you know, think of it as like, you know, 10% of the public maybe not being super interested before the primaries start, or when the primaries are pretty boring. But then by September, October, November, they express greater interest. So we have seen that before. We also have seen some increase in this general interest, but we're talking about sort of single digit percentage point increases, and not every election. So the 1980 election, when Reagan was elected, that was one where you can actually see a little bit of an uptick in political interest. The 2008, the Obama election, is another one that we see. We don't see it every election. We don't see it every 4 years. So presidential election, I mean here. And we didn't really see it in 2016. 2020 was more a little bit more interesting to people. And then the other one that really was kind of, at least by our magnitudes, pretty pathbreaking were the 2018 midterms. If you look at the turnout rate for those midterm elections, there it was close to 50% when regularly we get about 40%. And so in my book, that is a very, very dramatic increase. The question that is interesting there is, were people more interested in 2018, or did they just think the stakes were higher and therefore they participated without necessarily changing their interest all that much? I could see something like that happening again in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my sense as well. In that you could have, again, kind of heavier rates of participation without people feeling as much of a need to engage in a particular campaign. I think there is some setup in particular for 2024 in that it looks like 2020 in terms of the National Party candidates, of people not necessarily feeling like they need to be as engaged in following campaign information, but nonetheless still feeling like they should turn out. So I think those two things might be separate in this particular year, though I don't want to make predictions without having any survey data of what things look like in front of me.
Thank you. I realize I, you know, kind of threw a curveball at you with questions that you might not have the empirical evidence to support your answers to. But thank you for playing along. And I think related to this, I'm going to ask you to speculate a little bit more again. So what are some things that you think the candidates are doing well to try to draw in uninterested voters, if anything? Or maybe the easier question is, what are some things that they're doing to that might be pushing people away? And is there a point where we, you know, we talked about this uptick in general, but are there some groups that even as the election approaches, you know, they deactivate their Facebook because they don't want to be inundated with political content, or they are just so sick of it that they're going to avoid the news even more as the election approaches because they know the type of coverage they're going to see, and they're just going to they're not even going to watch ESPN because they can't escape the election. So, like, are there actions that politicians and media are taking throughout this campaign cycle that you think is really turning people off or drawing people in successfully?
I don't have a great answer, but you know, my sense is that actually the policy stakes, so like fairly dramatic plans or actually plans with some credible behavior in recent history, might be more motivating than any kind of like, oh, you know, the guy is an engaging speaker or something like that. So I'm thinking in particular that the recent changes in abortion policy in many states, and then the chances to vote on that in the fall in some states that have referenda on the ballot, that I would probably put that as like an expectation for potentially a pretty motivating factor for left of center folks in particular.
I think, again, kind of returning to these questions of social media, it often becomes sort of difficult to separate the actual candidate or the actual party and the actual platform from people who might sort of speak about that particular party or about that candidate. In political science, this would be the principal agent problem, where you have somebody who's the candidate, who's the principal, but you have all these quote unquote agents who the principal might not have picked, right? They might, the candidate hasn't picked every single person who's talking about the election, hasn't said to every single person, you please post about the election, post your thoughts about why everyone should support me. And I think sometimes it's difficult for people who are especially disengaged to separate the supporter who's constantly talking about the candidate from the candidate themselves, and to separate the news article and the actual reporting from the person who has shared this article with their opinion. And I think that more complicated media and information environment, where you're receiving inputs not just from the candidate, but from people who the candidate might never have hoped would speak about them or share their thoughts about them. I think for people who are especially avoidant of politics and especially nervous about politics, it's that sort of information sharing that might make them most likely to avoid these informational environments. And so in this case, in some cases, it might not be anything the media or the candidate is doing, but it's really the ability to share in a social media platform.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think related to some comments in the chat, I think a lot of what you're highlighting here about sort of this this trickle down effect, essentially, where it might not be the candidate, but the way that the candidate's supporters are behaving and acting. And we see that on social media in a totally new scale, not new, but newer scale with the possibilities here. But I suspect that this could also happen in our face-to-face networks as well, right? Or even seeing news coverage of, and I think this is building on one of your papers about affective polarization, Yana, and thinking about how media coverage of the ideologically extreme, politically engaged portion of the public can sort of overly contribute to some of these attitudes and the perceptions that we have about partisans compared to the modal or typical out partisan. So we have just a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to kind of end with a totally lame question to you both, but I wanted to just sort of open the floor if Yana or Marcus, if you had any kind of concluding thoughts on, what are the biggest puzzles that we still don't know when it comes to interest in politics, or your 2-minute reflections on our conversation today.
As I said, I've been thinking about this for a while, and I end up kind of like stumbling at one particular point when I think about this from a very sort of like with a big prism and a from sort of the big picture. And I call it the vanilla problem, which is like, why do some of us like vanilla ice cream and others like chocolate? Is political interest like that? Is it just like, I'm getting a kick out of it or I'm not? Or is politics is the interest component of it? Not all of politics obviously is different than eating ice cream, but the like I find this interesting, I find this gratifying. Is politics there different from the other domains in our lives? And I just revealed my culinary preferences here. You probably all have things that you find just deeply interesting, and is it more or less an accident of personality or something like that, that for some people that's politics and for others it's not? That to me is still a very much an unanswered question, and even whether that's the right way to think about it.
I think in doing our research, one of the things that we kept kind of returning to is that there is this sense among people who are deeply engaged and deeply politically involved to feel like the people who are less engaged and less involved are doing something wrong. That like there's this disbelief that somebody could not be as engaged and involved in politics. So I think it's often, for us at least in writing the book, it was often to kind of remember and look at the data showing that being less engaged and less involved doesn't mean you don't care. Being less engaged and being less involved doesn't mean you don't think things are important. They're just levels of how much a person can give of their life to a particular area at a given point. So I think thinking about that as we looked at the data was something that we kind of thought about a lot.
I actually think, just to follow up quickly, I think it actually would be great if we understood that somebody who's not interested but realizes that the stakes are big still went out and vote. I think that is, I think, a pretty profound point on my wish list for democracy.
Yes. Cosign 100%.
Those are great words to end on here. So thank you so much to Yana Krupnikov and Marcus Pryor for a great conversation today. And thank you all for joining us today. A video recording of this program will be available 1 or 2 days after today at I don't know if the link is being shared, but z.umn.edu/political interest. This program will also be available in podcast form on all your favorite podcast platforms and can be found by searching Dialogue Across Difference. We recommend subscribing to our podcast so you don't miss any of our event recordings. Thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great rest of your week.